I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. These days, the old cliche that women aren't funny sounds pretty ludicrous. We are in an age of hugely popular female comics, Tina Fey, Sarah Silverman, Amy Schumer, among many others. Yet male comedians still dominate the comedy circuit, book the talent, and make more money making jokes. Some female comedians also have started to speak out about sexual harassment and abuse within this largely male world. Is the comedy scene unwelcoming to women? Are there topics male comedians shouldn't make jokes about, like rape? If so, what else is off limits? What's funny and not so funny about being a funny lady? Three comedians share their thoughts on Midday after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for joining us. We're talking today about what it's like to be a woman in comedy. Women have been doing it for a long time. Moms Mabley played the Apollo Theater in 1939. Phyllis Diller launched her career in the 50s. Lucille Ball, Joan Rivers, Whoopi Goldberg. But there has never been such an explosion of female comedic talent as we are seeing now. Too many female comedians to mention have become household names over the last decade. Many of the funniest people in television and film are women, and increasingly women are creating shows. Transparent and Orange is the New Black, for example. Last year, the first ever Emmy for sketch comedy went to a woman, Amy Schumer. Has the glass ceiling been shattered? Some critics think so. Sarah Silverman once told a reporter that, quote, the last relic of the whole women in comedy issue is being asked over and over again what it's like being a female comedian, close quote. But not everybody agrees. The nonprofit organization Women in Comedy recently posted an online form asking women who'd been harassed by men in the comedy world to submit their stories anonymously. Hundreds of submissions have poured in. Today we're talking to three female comedians, off-Broadway actress and stand-up comedian Michelle, who has dubbed herself the indie mom of comedy, is with us in the studio. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you could come. Also joining us is Jessica Henkin. She's co-producer of the Stoop Storytelling Series and has performed with the Baltimore Improv Group for more than a decade. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
And finally, improv performer Megan Wills is with us. She's co-founder of the Charm City Comedy Project and the Charm City Comedy Festival, which is going on now. The festival will include a Women in Comedy panel this Sunday. We'll have information about that on the Midday page at WYPR.org. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much.
So, Megan Wills, you have put together a panel, as I mentioned, on women in comedy as part of the Charm City Comedy Festival. What prompted you to do that?
Oh, actually, one of my headliners, her name is Dana Carchioli, and she works with the Second City in Chicago. She had the idea.
What do you hope this panel is going to address?
Well, number one, it's going to address sexual harassment in comedy, which pretty much has been an up-and-coming issue lately, especially. And it's also going to address how we as venue owners and managers can make a better environment for women in general in comedy, and also what it's like to be a woman of color in comedy and an LGBTQ performer in comedy as well.
Do you think sexual harassment is a particular problem in the comedy world, or is it just that women in this field have not spoken out much until now?
I do think it's a little more prevalent in the comedy world, mainly because comedians operate without much of a filter. So they tend to say what they want to say, regardless of whether or not it offends anyone, just because it's funny.
And we're going to talk more about harassment later as this conversation unfolds. But Michelle, I want to get clear on something. You style yourself the indie mom of comedy. What does that mean?
I'm so glad you asked. That is the best question in the world, Sheila. Indie, you think of indie films, right? You think of how Redford made this amazing thing happen in the middle of nowhere, what, Utah, and he started the Indie Film Festival there.
There's a lot which going became, on in Utah.
Yeah, well, okay, whatever. Besides Mormons and lots of babies. But he started this whole thing, Sundance, and it became the anti-Hollywood, but became more famous than the Hollywood film itself, the film industry itself, because it promoted those films who would never really get a good space in Hollywood, but they were brilliant in their own right. I'm not suggesting that I'm brilliant in my own right. I'm suggesting that I don't fit the mold of what a mom is supposed to look like or show up as in terms of, you know, I'm a mother of three. I've been married 16 plus years. And, you know, there's a sort of look that moms have. There's a sort of lifestyle that the average mom has. And I'll tell you that I am all those things and not. And so I created this moniker as a way to express myself as still very independent, very innovative, and still having lots of individuality while loving motherhood and marriage, but totally all about seeking and living my own dream, which makes me, I think, a better wife and a better mother. And so indie means independent, innovative, with individuality. And yes, still a mom.
And that's where your comedy is coming from.
It's coming from that space, but it's also because it's indie, I don't have to stay in that lane. So I'm able to touch on all kinds of topics without seeming like a scatterbrain. And so for me, the indie concept gives me license, if you will, to talk about all things, you know, current events, pop culture, because any good mom should know a little bit about everything. And that's just my thought process. But yeah, I created that because I could not find a space where I actually fit as a stand-up comic.
Jessa Henkin, have we just heard from Michelle sort of a germ of what it is that lots of women comics are bringing to doing comedy that perhaps men don't as much? A sort of a broader take on what's funny and
well, I think
where to
in
find
general,
the humor?
Right? I think women are just you know, naturally smarter than men, so I think that a lot of, you know, what comes from that is better comedy. No, in all seriousness, I mean, I think, you know, first off, Michelle is one of the most hilarious women I've ever met, especially in Baltimore. And for those who can't see her, she is very attractive. So anyway, that's just a fill in.
Okay,
so
this was not planned to be an hour-long love fest. I don't expect you to take off after each other, but
all right, so,
but I do want to understand whether men are still dominating comedy. I have that impression in terms of kind of who's in charge, but maybe I'm wrong. And whether comedy is changing to reflect because of women.
I think there's no question that there are many more women that are showing up in all the comedic forms, right? So in the 50s and 60s, there's no question that men dominated comedies up actually until the 90s. But I think since we've had this renaissance, it's extremely exciting for women, but that doesn't mean that our work is done. It means that, you know, many ways we have to work harder. The expectation, from what I've been able to see, is that there is a lot more acceptance for mediocre work. I mean, not to be so anti-male, but from men. Whereas if a woman's going to be ready to perform, she's going to be stage ready.
So you're basically saying a version of Ginger Rogers had to do everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards in high heels.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
You're saying
right.
The same thing as doing comedy.
Yeah. I think that there's less tolerance for women basically kind of workshopping in front of an audience in the same way that there's an allowance for it with men. So the women that I've seen who are performing, they're just at the top of their game.
Since you have now twice in a less than 4 minutes disparaged the opposite sex, which is not represented at this table, this is a good time for me to remind listeners, especially our male listeners, that you can be part of this conversation. What would you like to ask these funny women? You can join the conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780. Or if you're shy, you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Megan Wills, how do you think what women do on stage, how it's changed as comics?
I do think that to a certain extent, over the time that women have been in comedy, that they have had to sort of align to these parameters that men expect from them.
What parameters
look
are you
attractive,
talking about?
Be a proper lady, talk about women-related things, I guess. And we've just busted out of all those now. So I think we're more comfortable with our own sexuality, talking about it, not in just a way that it pertains to men, but in the way that it pertains to us personally, and talk about things that aren't necessarily popular subjects.
Such like as?
How difficult it is to be a mom, for example. Or just how difficult it is to be a woman in comedy. I mean, a lot of comedy is just commenting on your life. So if you're a woman in comedy, then some of your material is going to end up going towards that.
But at what point does that get to be too inside baseball? Talking about being, talking about the issues of being a mom, I would think is universal for at least half, for close to half your audience. Talking about the particular challenges that women in comedy face, does that resonate with audiences?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Give me an example.
Of mother, of problems with motherhood resonating with audience?
No, I'm talking about the if some of your comedy grows out of the challenges you face being a woman in comedy, does that do, is that something funny for the audience? Can you make that funny?
Yes. I think especially in improv, what's funny is what's true. And if you open up your mouth and say what's true, you will at least get a few people to laugh in the audience.
Okay. Michelle, you wanted to jump in?
I just wanted to jump in because I think what we may be intellectualizing it a little too much, because simply comedy is your point of view. And it shows up differently for all kinds of people. I mean, some people have made a living with the self-deprecation comedy where it's all about, oh, I hate myself. And they find a way to poke fun at their own insecurities. But then there are others who celebrate nuances, like the Ellen DeGeneres of us all, who can just, she's just an observational comic. She's an anecdotal observational comic. She can look at something that we all see and she can pull back the layers and find funny in places maybe we might not have seen, you know. So for me as a mom, while I created that Indie Mom moniker, simply because that is how I show up, I am a mom, but I have so much more to say. And I think that one point of being a mom, I always say this, every male comic had to come through a woman to live. Like he had to have a mom. And so everybody, whether you liked your mom, you loathed your mom, you had a mom. And so that's a universal truth. Everyone in the human race comes from a mom. I'm sure they're doing stuff to advance that now in science because, you know, it's all kinds of stuff happening. But that's besides the point. The point I'm making is that we should have the liberty, just like the male comics do, to talk about everything. It shouldn't be just because of our gender that we stick to gender-specific content. And so for me, yeah, that's easy. It's sort of like a home run. But at the same time, I like to jump on the other side of things and talk about things that typically people would say, oh, how do you know about that? Well, I've experienced it. And since I've experienced it, such as race, such as social justice, I have the liberty and permission to speak about it comedically. So I don't like to put myself in a box as a stand-up.
Jessica, how does it strike you what comes from individual experience or broader?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, this is one of the rules that we use in the Stoop storytelling series too, is the more specific you are, the more people can relate to what you're saying. So that doesn't sound intuitive, but it comes off because basically you're really speaking from an authentic point of view, like Michelle was saying, and you can go into intense detail and you can be observational. You can be self-deprecating because you know exactly what it is that you're speaking from. So
we've got lots more to talk about. I hear somebody's phone is sort of near the microphone because I'm hearing kind of a buzzing sound. We'll fix that over the break. We are going to take a quick break. We're going to hear more from our three funny ladies about what it is like working in the male-dominated world of comedy. And we would love to hear from you. Do you ever go to comedy shows? Is the lineup usually male? And if so, does that bother you? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. On Midday Today, we're talking about women in comedy. My guests are stand-up comedian Michelle and improv performers Megan Wills and Jessica Henkin. Who is your favorite comedian? Why? Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, midday@wypr.org. Michael has called us from Baltimore. Michael, welcome to Midday.
Jackie. How you doing?
Just great. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, I run three shows in Baltimore, and I have to be honest with you, it's disappointing that it's tough to fill out lineups. They're showcase shows, so it's a little bit different than an open mic, but it is difficult to fill out shows with great, who are competent female comedians, just because Baltimore doesn't have the density of population as, say, a Washington, D.C. does. But there's definitely a great comedy scene in town. Jessica Murphy Garrett out of Single Carrot Theater is an amazing comic. Kathy Carson's an amazing comic. Cameron Farmer's an amazing comic. Samantha Kelly, who's actually Cameron and Samantha, are on my show tomorrow night at Riley's. They're great young comics, too. I wish there were more of them. It seems to be pandering sometimes. Like, we're going to have an all-female show at the Auto Bar in June. And it's going to be an all-female show, but I hate to pander to it. I just want great comics on my shows. I don't really care about genitalia, to be honest with you.
And so, Michael, you're saying that as somebody who books shows, you cannot find enough great female comics to book?
Yeah, I wish there were more. I just want good comics on my shows, to be honest with you.
Okay. I appreciate your comment, Michael. How do you ladies react to Michael's point? Is there a dearth of female comics?
Do I have to be the obvious one to jump in? Go ahead, Megan.
Oh, no, I'd be more than happy to. For the last 8 months or so, I've been running Prim and Proper, which is an all-women's comedy stand-up showcase every first Friday at Charm City Comedy Project. And one of the things I did when I started booking shows was kind of make a list of all the comics that exist in D.C. and Baltimore so that I could book them. And I think I have probably about... it's probably about a fifth as many women comics in general that I can contact and ask to be on shows. So it is harder to book an all-woman showcase, because most people just are difficult to book in general, but because there are less female comics. But I would suggest to Michael, definitely go to those DC comics. Bring those DC comics up to your Baltimore shows because they will come.
Well, I mean, what I'm trying to understand is, do you think that there really just aren't enough women who have developed great comedy chops, or is it that people putting lineups together overlook women whom they could book?
Well, I think that there's definitely still Baltimore in its art scene is still people kind of stay in their routine of where they go to see, you know, comedy, where they go to see music. So, you know, I would wonder if Michael, our caller, had known about Michelle, you know, and the places where Michelle performs. And, you know, there's, I think, a broader community that is still, not everyone is aware of the amount of female comics that are available at large, because, you know, you might just get into the routine. Comedy is very much a habit forming and experience, and that you find your people and you tend to stay with your people. And so if you're used to going to certain bars and certain clubs, that becomes, you know,
your world.
That becomes your world. And so it's harder to know about the world at large. And Baltimore is still a big city, but once you find your place in it, I think, you know, it's harder to kind of to get your brain around all the opportunities out there as far as, or the ability to give people opportunities to perform.
Sheila, I just got to jump in 2 seconds on this one because it was interesting. I'm a native Baltimorean, but I work mostly outside of Baltimore. I have to be fair about that. I'm mostly in New York or L.A. or Chicago, but I still have a home here. I have a family here. And it's just interesting, all the years that I've been in stand-up, I've never really worked many mainstream shows when I am in Baltimore. It's still very, very segregated. And all the comics that he named...
Segregated by gender? Segregated by
segregated by race and gender. Yeah. You know, all of the comics that he named, I don't know that any of them were women of color. I do know that he
a couple were.
Yeah. Okay, but the deal too is that it's still a very segregated city in terms of how it even engages its art. You know, I mean, you'll hear urban, you'll hear the word urban thrown around, and you'll get the notion that, oh, it's an all black show, an all African American.
Urban
show.
Is code for black.
Code word for black or African American. And you know, it's just interesting to me when I do come home to Baltimore and I'm thinking, oh, it'd be great to just pop out. Like when I'm in New York, I can go out any night to do a open mic or to do a showcase. It's it's like I never hear about that happening here. It's almost like in a silo. So I don't know who Mike is. And I've done, you know, Nickelodeon, I've done Stars, I've done, you know, ABC. And I don't know who Mike is, and he doesn't know who I am. I don't know if it's so much about marketing or a presence, or if it's more just about, a little more about what Jessica was saying, that they're in clusters and that they kind of all stay in their own spaces and they book the ones that they know in their spaces and they don't venture out, because literally it's a Google click. It's a Google click, and you can find anybody you want to find these days in the world.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think also, not to get too deep into the world of comedy, but you know, when Michael's talking about, Michael, you spurred such a great conversation. Thank you for your call. He was talking about stand-up. And stand-up is definitely a form of comedy, but there's also improv. And I happen to know more women that do improv comedy. It's ensemble-based. And it's not where stand-up, and this is not to play to gender norms, but there's a lot of patterns and that goes into creating a stand-up routine. And so there's an interesting theory, right, that men are better at stand-up because their brains gravitate more to formulas and patterns, because that's ultimately what comedy is in the stand-up world. It's not true, but I think that is, you know, there is no question that I happen to know more women in improv than I do as stand-ups.
Well, it reminds me of what's often said about women in management, that women are more collaborative, cooperative, less directive. So you're making me think that stand-up is more kind of straight on,
it's
head
not.
On.
No, it's not. Sheila, okay. It's not. It's not that dogmatic. There was a world where it used to be set up punchline. Now you have your anecdotal comic who can tell a great story. Then you have your, like I said before, your observational comic who can peel
like
back
Ellen
the layers.
DeGeneres.
Yeah. And then you have your more traditional comic with the set up punchline. But then you also have your prop comics. There's a very amazing prop comic on tour right now with Wanda Sykes that's originally from D.C., Kevin Lee. I mean, he's a prop comic like Carrot Top. But, you know, there's all kinds of comedy. It's just it's an acquired taste, if you will. You know, whatever it is that you enjoy, if you enjoy the old school setup joke, take my wife, please, the Henny Youngman kind of thing.
I love those jokes.
You know, then that works. But, you know, for someone like myself, you know, it's been often told, you tell great stories, Michelle. I'm more like, you know, the Cosby-esque, Carlin-esque, you know, Richard Pryor-esque kind of comic, Mom's Mabley kind of comic, where I'll wrap you around a story and I'll have you entrenched, which is why Stoop Stories was a great opportunity for me as well, because I tell stories, and so it was just a good way to show my stand-up style as well.
That's Michelle, a stand-up comedian, here on Midday on WYPR. We're talking about women in comedy. Jessica Henkin, who is performs with the Baltimore Improv Group, as well as being a co-founder of the Stoop Storytelling Series, is here. And Megan Wills, Charm City Comedy Festival co-founder. You can be part of this conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Megan, a few minutes ago, you were talking about some of the cliches that had been exploded, I think may have been your verb. And looks was one of them. Are looks no longer important for women in comedy?
I think to a certain extent.
Because everybody here is very attractive. Let me just stipulate.
I think to a certain extent they are, but it doesn't really have to do with the comedy world. It just has to do with the world in general. That you get by a little bit easier if you look good. And people notice you if you look good, and people take you more seriously in business. If you wear more makeup, they take you more seriously in business.
And so that's important in terms of getting booked for a show, or that's important in relating to the audience, or both?
I think there's plenty of people in the audience that aren't going to be wearing makeup, and so they will definitely be on your level. But yeah, I think just in general, in terms of being presentable, getting booked for shows, and having a public presence, yeah, it's important to look like you have it together.
This is when I taught a class with Baltimore Improv Group a few years ago.
This is Jessica.
There was a woman who was taking the class, and she was very pretty, very attractive, and I remember giving her the note that her tendency was to play attractive, sexy characters, and it was a really hard note for one woman to give to another, but I said, you know, in order to be funny, don't play sexy. And, you know, or in order to be funnier, just be goofy, be yourself, be unafraid to look silly. And it did make a big difference in ultimately how she played, because I think that she felt, I mean, this is conjecture, but it seemed like she felt like she needed to still lead with sexuality in her performance no matter what. And then the comedy, you know, could kind of filter down from there.
Well,
you know,
I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure I understand, because, I mean, obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into being attractive, and some of it is physical attributes, but some of it is how you present. And you seem to be saying, Jessica, that it's hard for a pretty woman to be funny, to be received as funny.
I think it's hard for a pretty woman if she sees herself as first being pretty.
That makes sense, because I have to jump in. I poke a lot of fun on stage about aesthetic and about appearance, simply because as a mom, we can lose ourselves. And my point about lifting up that in my stand-up is that when you feel better about yourself, you're just better for everybody else. And it's more about self-care than it is about narcissism. So, you know, when I think about Whitney Cummings, who's a very attractive stand-up comedian, I think about Rita Rutner, who performs in a ball gown, you know, in Vegas, and gets sold-out shows every night in Las Vegas. She performs in a full ball gown every night, and she's a riot. She's hilariously funny. You know, I think there's just a little bit too much being played into. If you're aesthetically, you know, put together, if you're put together and you're intentional about it, there's some sense of conceit. Well, I just think that's how that person shows up organically. I think Rita Rutner would probably walk into a Whole Foods in a cocktail dress if she wanted to. I just think that's her thing. But if it's authentic, Sheila, if it's an authentic thing about yourself, you can play up to that. But
and
if
it can be
if
funny.
It comes from a space of insecurity, that's very obvious as well.
Yeah. Megan, I think you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in general, I think that women that are pretty and funny, which, yes, they do exist. If you look at any of the women that are on SNL today, they just have to push a little bit harder to get past the fact that the audience is going to see them as pretty and sexy first. And that's one of the reasons why these gorgeous women do some of the most disgusting things that you'll see on TV, like drink a bottle of ranch dressing or something like that, because that's going to help the audience to get past it and see the funny first. And the other thing I wanted to say, just to go back a little bit, I do think that stand-up is more of an individual art, in that mm-hmm. you work on your material yourself. You practice it so that it's perfect for yourself, and the interaction that you have and the validation you have is from the audience. Whereas when you're an improv performer, it's a team. You need to be a part of a team and have the other women and men's back on your team. And that's one of the reasons why it is really important for women in general in comedy to be a family and to touch base with each other and to have these groups like the Women in DC Baltimore Comedy, which I created on Facebook, so that they can talk to each other, A, about sexual harassment or creepy men, and B, about opportunities, about being a family, giving each other a leg up, and all that stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Another Jessica has phoned us. Jessica from Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks.
Jessica, I didn't hear that.
Oh, hi, Sheila. Thank you.
Oh, sure. And your comment or your question?
Yeah, there was some mentions a few minutes ago about, I know Megan runs the Prim and Proper show, Charm City Comedy, and I'm curious as to what the panelists in general feel about all female lineups. As a comedian, I find myself torn about whether they are overall beneficial or at worst, detrimental. I wouldn't go that far, but I'm wondering if they could be to the cause of women in comedy. And I also wanted to just take a moment to give a shout out to your previous caller, Michael, because I have noticed him, perhaps more than many bookers I know, at shows that he sees purely as a patron, and my belief is that he sees those for research purposes, and I encourage every other booker on the planet to do the same.
Jessica, thank you for the call. What
the all female lineup?
Yeah, what's your take on that?
It's a catch 22. You know, there's a hierarchy in stand up comedy. It is a male dominated art. And yet at the same time, I think there's oftentimes where it needs to happen just organically, if there's a women's festival, if there's some sort of women's specific event, but not so much that it has to be intentional. We're having a female show tonight. I just think that is just that there. I can't find the language to describe it, but it's not my favorite thing to do, in other words. But I don't turn it down but it's just not my favorite thing to do.
Megan, what would you say? You put these together.
Well, first off, I'd just like to mention that the caller is Jessica Murphy Garrett, who the previous caller mentioned. She is an amazing stand-up comic, and she has been on my Prim and Proper show. And she's not the only one that has actually mentioned to me that they're not sure how they feel about an all-women show. But I feel like a lot of that comes from the fact that most promoters are men. And so most people that are putting these all-female shows together are men. So in that case, yeah, it is a little bit questionable, because why are they getting an all-female lineup together? Is it because they're interested in promoting females, or is it because they want to date? Or, you know, so it's difficult to know. But I will say that my all-female show consistently has more supportive audiences and more females in the audiences. And it doesn't seem to attract men who are looking to kind of score.
It doesn't seem
to be that way.
Jason from Towson is calling us with a question that I wanted to get into. Jason,
hi, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm interested in hearing from your panel about there seems to be a pushback by some comedians that there's too much of a PC culture, or possibly a room where people are getting too offended and they're not willing to put themselves out there. So Chris Rock, John Cleese have spoken about this, and I wonder if your panel would be interested in talking about that line between touching on taboo topics and also, you know, being able to engage people in something that's funny but also uncomfortable.
I love that question. That's one of my favorite questions in the universe.
Thanks.
Right there.
Thanks,
Thank you
Jason.
So much for asking that question, Jason. Seinfeld put out a statement a few months back about how he would no longer perform at colleges and universities. Seinfeld doesn't have a potty mouth or anything. He's not a blue comic, in other words, no profanity. But he'd gotten to a space where he was tired of engaging these university students who were so easily offended by anything he would say. And he said, that's it. He says, gone are the days where you could literally poke fun or lift up a point comedically, you know, just for the sake of laughter, and everyone's all offended now because everybody's so super sensitive about their positions on all kinds of things. And if you don't understand comedy, don't come to a comedy show. This is where we get to talk about whatever we like as stand-ups. We get licensed.
So you'd say there are no taboos?
I wouldn't say that. I say everything's in good taste. My thought about that is that, you know, some comics have a way of saying the most unmentionable things in a very gracious way, and some comics just don't have that gift. Understand your craft. I understand how I show up, you know, comedically, and how I articulate. So I can talk about some things that other people I think may talk about differently, and it may be offensive to them. I talk about sex without ever using the word sex. I can talk about sex and creating life with my husband and never bring up the term sex.
You just said sex four times.
Yeah, I said it four times. So, but that's the point I'm making. But the point I'm making is some people can't. They have to go to the very obvious. They have no nuance, and that can be offensive.
I want to hear from both Jessica Henkin and Megan Wills on this question of what the taboos are, if there are taboos, and whether they're the same for male and female comics. But we need to take a break. And so I'll ask our listeners. They may also want to weigh in on that question. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. We're going to continue talking with our three female comedians about women in comedy after this quick break. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about women in comedy. I'm speaking with Megan Wills, co-founder of the Charm City Comedy Festival, stand-up comedian Michelle, and Baltimore improv group performer Jessica Henkin. Has the glass ceiling been broken? Is comedy different? Is that good or bad? Join our conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. I want to add something else to the conversation before we talk more about where the taboos are and if they are different. I want to play a clip from the sketch comedy TV series Inside Amy Schumer. Amy Schumer is walking in a park when she comes across Patricia Arquette, Tina Fey, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus drinking champagne.
Is it someone's birthday or?
Oh, kind of the opposite. We're celebrating Julia's last day.
Yes, salute.
I'm sorry. Did you say Julia's last day? Mm-hmm. What is that?
Mm.
In every actress's life, the media decides when you finally reach the point where you're not believably f***able anymore.
I mean, how do you know? Who tells you?
Well, nobody really overtly tells you, but there are signs. How Sally Field was Tom Hanks' love interest in Punchline, and then like 20 minutes later she was his mom in Forrest Gump.
This sketch lampoons how women are treated in the entertainment industry as they age. Michelle, you are the mother of three, and you've been performing for 18 years. Is it harder to get booked now than at this stage in your life?
Actually, no. It's actually better than ever, actually, for me.
I'm going to second that. I mean, I just proudly turned 42.
Yay.
And
yay.
I have two kids. And I think that once you hit an age in which you're comfortable and you're confident, you know, that's people respond to that. So, I mean, there's... I'll let Michelle finish, but I definitely think that comedy is one world in which there's a lot of room for older women and younger women and just any type of person as long as they're funny.
Because the world keeps growing. You know, the world doesn't stop. It's not stagnant. So you always have younger people. You always have what they call older people. You always have what they call middle age. But what stays the same is that laughter is a panacea for everyone. And so there's always a voice for that crowd, in other words. And then for me, I feel like comedy is like wine. The more you do it, the longer you do it, the better you get, the more you have permission to speak about things. So I think I'm only getting better, not from a narcissistic space, but just as a stand-up, I'm only getting better and the content's getting better.
Megan, you want to weigh in on this?
Oh,
you don't have to. I mean, I'm
the youngest.
she hasn't aged yet. I guess one of the questions it raises in my mind is whether this question of women comics feeling stronger and being accepted by audiences as years accumulate, does that relate to the question of taboos? Are people more willing to hear something that pushes the edge of the envelope a bit from someone who's got some experience on her?
Well, I definitely think that when I, you know, so in my Stoop world, I've had
Stoop
to learn, Stoop storytelling series, I've had to learn to not be as blue over the years as I've gotten older, because you kind of know your audience, and it depends on what you want to have feedback on. And I got a lot of feedback when I was especially blue or full of profanity. But that said, in the improv world, I feel like it's very it's a surprise when an older woman says something pretty scatological or profane or
so it's kind of like the French dressing on the ball gown that Megan was talking about earlier. There's a shock value to it.
Indeed. I do think in general there's a shift in consciousness, and that has to do with the generations that are coming up as well, to actually, you know, be kinder, be more generous to people, take care of people that you care about, because life doesn't go on forever. And, you know, I do think that because of that, more comics are going away from sexist material. And sexist material now is kind of the new taboo. And I don't think it really has anything to do with being PC. I think people can use that as an excuse to be a jerk. You know, if they say something that just is a general offensive thing and somebody gets offended, they're going to say, oh, well, you're too PC. But the thing is, comedy is an individual thing, and everybody's going to get offended by something. So that's one of the reasons why comedians are proud of the fact that they can do and say whatever they want. But at the end of the day, are you going to what's called walk your audience? In other words, is your audience going to get up and leave because they don't like what you're saying? And in general, I find that dirty stuff and sexual stuff and all that goes over way better if women are not sort of the subject of it.
So are you saying that both male and female comics are pulling away from that kind of material?
Indeed. I've had most of the male comics that I put on my shows don't have anything about women being dumb or anything like that. It just isn't done anymore. And when you do see old style comics that talk about, you know, that kind of thing, it just dies. It's crickets.
See, I have to agreeably disagree with that, because on the larger scene, like when I'm in LA and I'm at the Comedy Store in Sunset, there are comics who have reached like stardom from just being extremely sexist. There's a comic, in fact, from Chicago, my other city where my family is, and I work there quite a bit, named Corey Holcomb, who is just, his entire set is just the worst things you could ever say about relationships and women and children. And it's the shock value of it all. It's the audacity of it all that has made him a certain kind of household name. He's selling out theaters. He's selling out clubs. And he's not the only unicorn. There's still tons of comics on the New York scene, the LA scene, the Chicago scene, who have this kind of content and are having a level of what people would call success. To me, success is relative. Success means that you feel good about what you're doing, but you also have an audience. And it could be a virtual audience. There are people getting millions of hits on YouTube, but they can't fill a club. And then there are people who can fill clubs who have no presence on YouTube. So now, because of technology and because of all the ways in which you can get your content out, success is extremely relative, and so is content. So there are people like
Donald Trump.
Like Donald Trump, but there are people like Doug Stanhope. Doug Stanhope is a comic I've known for over 15 years. Doug Stanhope is an acquired taste. He used to be on the show called The Man Show. But he'll show up at a weird outlet in D.C., and he'll fill the place up for a night on end, but you may never see him on your mainstream show.
With Trump voters.
With very interesting people. So to say the least, I think that it's still out there, very much so.
We got an email from Michael, who wants to pursue a topic we touched on early in the show. For Megan with the Charm City Comedy Project, how do you deal with critics who blame showrunners, hosts, and owners of venues for problems that are systemic in the comedy industry? So we're talking about sexual harassment.
Again, that is one of the things. It does take a deft hand, and you do need to be diplomatic, because every relationship is individual, and that means every relationship with everyone that you book or everyone that's on every improv team is individual. And so, yes, I think to a certain extent, you are going to be held accountable for the content that occurs in your space. However, because we are a comedy club, and pretty much any night of the week you could walk in and find something offensive, you do have to walk the line a little bit, in that you have to take care of the individuals that were offended, and you have to...
The individuals in the audience?
Yes,
the individuals...
yes. I mean, you need to address it. You need to address those people who are holding you accountable, either the audience members or someone else, and make sure that they feel like they're being heard. And you do have to address the situation with the person that you're working with and intervene.
In Baltimore Improv Group, they've had a strong female presence in leadership and teaching staff. And at this point, they've also reached out to an organization called Holla Back Baltimore. It's Holla Back. And that organization is working with all the instructors and the leadership in the Baltimore Improv Group to just talk about creating safe spaces for people, specifically women, LGBT community, so that those performers do feel safe. It's not, again, to say that everything has to be so sanitized, right? I mean, it's still comedy. It's still okay to say what you're feeling and to be authentic, but it's an increased awareness of how to navigate that territory.
Meg from Baltimore has called us with a comment. Meg, welcome to Midday.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. And I'd like to thank all of you, because as a woman, I find it so affirming to hear strong female voices in comedy. So thank you for that. What I was going to say is that I really feel about comedy the same way I feel about sermons in churches, which is that they should make you a little bit uncomfortable, because that's the part of it that makes you think past the experience of just hearing the comedian.
Meg, I appreciate that.
Thanks for making that point. Anybody want to respond?
I appreciate that, because I think the comic is almost like the, for lack of better language right now, the resident intellectual and all things that we're not supposed to talk about. Like, it's you're that one who we give license to say the thing that we're all thinking, but we may not have the skill set to say it.
Or we didn't know we were thinking.
We jog that unconscious, or we stare up an emotion that was always there, but we just didn't have language. Listen, comedy is one of, stand-up is one of the most, the purest form of the art in my thought process, because it's you. You can't give the drummer some. There's no band back there. You can't give the drummer some. You can't give a solo to the trumpet player. It's just you and a microphone. And so in those moments, it's the scariest thing I've ever done, but it's the most liberating as well. And I'm not going to get up there and do Pollyanna. I'm going to actually speak from a space that I've really lived, and I have permission to speak about it. And I think that's what the people want.
Megan, what about Meg's point that comedy is supposed to make people uncomfortable? I presume she would say even the people doing it. How do you square that with addressing problems that people raise about sexual harassment?
Well, there's the rub. There's kind of the rub, because we do want our performers to feel free to express themselves. However, I do think the rules follow the same in comedy as they do in real life. If you wouldn't open up your mouth and say it to someone, to their face, in real life, you probably shouldn't say it on stage. And I know some people might disagree with me on that, but I think there are plenty of things that are funny without you having to go around and specifically pick things that you know are hot buttons that are going to hurt people.
Jessica Henkin, you want to weigh in?
I mean, I think it's a learning, right? I think it's okay to push buttons. I do. I think that you can either determine in yourself, okay, what is it about me that wants to push that button? Or as an audience member, you can be like, why is this button really bothering me? I think it's a learning for both of those folks. I'm really a person who I spend so much of my day filtered in my day job that this opportunity to be unfiltered is just, I think, what keeps my soul afloat and aflutter and happy in life. So
we are down to just a few minutes, and I want to get each of you to tell me what advice you would give to a young woman who's looking to enter the comedy world.
I think about my daughter every day, and now, especially when I see younger women in comedy, I see my daughter's, you know, face in all of them, and I just say, do it. You know, there are so many women and men that want to help you out, and you know, this is a great time. Be brave. You will have people that will definitely have your back.
Michelle?
I say get to know yourself, like, emphatically. Like, do the work on yourself, because I think when you speak from an authentic place, I think there's always going to be an audience for you. So I would tell any woman who's contemplating, first things first, get to know yourself. And then secondly, get out there. There's no rehearsal for stand-up. You just have to jump in and be in real time. That's what I would say.
And Megan Willis, what kind
of advice
would you
give? Well, I'm going to come at it from an improv perspective. I do think that improv and stand-up comedy help each other immensely. So if you were going to start doing stand-up, I would suggest you try to do improv first, because improv helps you to be more flexible. It helps you to deal with hecklers. It helps you to do crowd work. And I never moved on to stand-up. I'm perfectly happy staying with improv. I feel like we give a searing and beautiful truth every time we do a set. And it is a slightly different art, but it's a collaborative game.
How many up-and-coming improv students in Baltimore are women?
I'd say a good third.
Yeah, at least. I mean, there's a lot more than even 15 or 16 years ago when I first got started. It's significantly more.
We got this cryptic email from Beth. Women too self-deprecating more than the males? Does that explain some of the differences in men being in?
I don't see how you could possibly be more self-deprecating than a man. Like, the stand-ups that I watch, I mean, everything. They will get all the way down into the depths of their soul just beating themselves up. So I think it's
that's
equal.
Not it. Equal. Okay. I really enjoyed this conversation. I want to thank all of you.
Thanks so much for having us. It was really fun.
Off-Broadway actress and stand-up comedian Michelle, the indie mom of comedy, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Sheila.
Jessica Henkin, co-founder of the Stoop Storytelling Series and a performer with the Baltimore Improv Group, thanks. and improv performer Megan Willis, co-founder of the Charm City Comedy Festival. The festival is going on right now. We have information on the midday page at WYPR.org. Lunch for our midday guest today provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies, with locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade, sweet, and savory pies and quiches. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. The death last week of Father Daniel Berrigan, Jesuit priest, anti-war activist, and member of the Catonsville Nine, has us thinking about the peace movement he was so much a part of. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.